For those who don't know you, know me. My name is Brinzi Chiwanarski, and on behalf of Michael Green and Green's List, welcome to this morning's breakfast briefing. I do apologise for my croakiness, but I seem to have woken up this morning with some lurgy in my throat. Today's breakfast briefing is from assessment to appeal, the objection, resolution, opportunities in appealing the Commissioner's determination. This morning's discussion will commence with some remarks from Julianne Jacques, who's sitting closest to me, and then we'll have a brief break, and then we'll throw it open to the panel for discussion. There will be a roving mic so that people can ask questions. I'm joined on the panel this morning not only by Julianne, but Michael Bierman, Bill Oro, and Stephen Sharpley. I'm sure they're all well known to you, particularly those who practice in tax. I'm not going to waste time by introducing them all to you, but what I am going to say to you is that they are all very, and you can look at their profiles on the Green website or on the Bar website, but you'll see when you do that they're all very experienced tax practitioners. They've got many, many years, each one of them individually, as tax practitioners, some of them in private practice before coming here, and some in accounting firms before coming here. But I think it's better that we get on with the proceedings. So thank you all very much for coming, and I'll ask Julianne to address you first.
Good morning, everyone. This is part two of Green's List's four-part series on tax litigation. As Bryn said, we'll be covering the journey this morning from assessment through to the court or tribunal. This encompasses objections and the decision of whether to appeal an objection decision to the tribunal or to the court. We'll be covering what to do, when to do it, and the sorts of decisions that you need to make along the way. Now, I'm going to just, before we break for coffee, I'm going to provide the legislative framework. I'm just going to set up the basics and the way the process works from objection to to the court or the tribunal. If you like, I'm going to do the very basics, the fundamentals. I'll be doing the equivalent of 1+1, which for a lot of you may know all the details already, but it's going to set up just the basics to lead into the panel discussion. So I'll be doing the 1+1. The panel discussion is going to be doing covering more the nuclear physics of tax litigation. They're going to take the tax litigation atom and they're going to split it, and then they're going to fuse it, if they can, back together again. And if you know anything about nuclear physics, there's going to be a lot of energy released by the panel, and it's going to be pretty exciting after coffee. I'll try to make mine a bit exciting, but doing the fundamentals, it may not quite get there as much. I don't think I've oversold it, have I, guys?
No, we just had a nuclear explosion.
That's right. So you've received an assessment and you're unhappy with it. Your first and usually only port of call will be Part 4C of the Tax Administration Act. Part 4C sets out the process for objections against decisions of the Commissioner, and then if you're not happy with the Commissioner's decision on that objection, then Part 4C provides for reviews to the Tribunal or appeals to the Federal Court. Now, the Part 4C process does not apply to all decisions by the Commissioner. It only applies where there's a specific piece of legislation stating that the decision can be objected to under Part 4C. And perhaps the most obvious form of decision that can be objected against is an assessment. This includes an assessment of penalties. This means that if the Commissioner issues a separate assessment for the primary tax and a separate assessment for penalties, as he does now, then you have to make two objections, one against the primary tax assessment and one against the penalty assessment. The fact that that now occurs has given rise to something I'll be discussing later, concurrent proceedings, where you can have the same parties, the same facts in both the federal court and the tribunal. Other decisions that can be objected against include fringe benefits tax assessments, GST assessments, and there's also some determinations and decisions of the Commissioner. Just by way of example, the Commissioner's decision to make a personal services business determination is subject to the objection process in Part 4C. But there's a lot of decisions that cannot be objected against under Part 4C. For example, the decision not to grant an extension of time to lodge a return or to pay tax is not subject to the Part 4C process. A decision to exercise for the Commissioner, a Commissioner's decision to exercise his access powers under Section 263, or a decision he makes under Section 264 requiring a person to provide information or produce documents. 263 and 264 were, I think, covered a fortnight ago with the first part of this series. So if you receive a 264 notice, then you have to comply with it. You can't go to the Part 4C process. Also, a decision not to remit interest is not subject to the Part 4C process. Finally, I just want to cover off decisions relating to the collection of tax on an assessment. Collection processes are outside the objection procedure in Part 4C. This will include garnishee notices issued by the Commissioner and freezing orders. Now, the litigation issues around collection are a completely different topic, but very broadly, once you do have an assessment, the Commission is in a very, very strong position to collect on that assessment, regardless of whether or not Part 4C proceedings are going on at the same time. If you are interested in that topic, and if there is enough interest, then we will think about running a separate breakfast briefing on all of the issues surrounding collection and what a taxpayer might be able to do if the Commissioner is seeking to collect on an assessment whilst the taxpayer at the same time is contesting that assessment under Part 4C. So maybe if you are interested in that topic, either let one of us know or drop a line to Michael Green, an email to Michael Green, and just tell him that you're interested. And if enough people say they are, we might run one. So what do you do about a decision that can't use the Part 4C process? I'll just briefly touch on that. It's not the main focus of this morning. What you can do is you can seek judicial review of the decision. Now, I just want to talk, that's under the ADJR Act or Section 39B of the Judiciary Act. I just want to touch on judicial review and an assessment. Judicial review will rarely help you with an assessment. First of all, you can't seek, it specifically says in the ADJR Act that you can't seek judicial review of a Commissioner's decision leading up to the making of an assessment. That's in Schedule 1 to that Act. Generally speaking also, you can't seek judicial review of a decision that's covered by the Part 4C procedure. You can't seek judicial review of an assessment. And this is the effect of Sections 175 and 177 of the 36 Tax Act. Section 175 says that the validity of any assessment shall not be affected by reason that any of the provisions of this Act have not been complied with. And Section 177 says that the production of a notice of assessment is conclusive evidence of the due making of the assessment and, except in proceedings under Part 4C, that the amount and all the particulars of the amount of the assessment are correct. The High Court said in the Futurist decision that Section 175 will largely protect an assessment against judicial review and limit the taxpayer to the Part 4C process, except in the case of maladministration, in which case there's no assessment and judicial review is available. But four of the judges in Futurist adopted the comments of Justice Hill and said that it will be in very rare cases that a taxpayer will succeed in showing that there was bad faith in the issue of an assessment by the Commissioner. Finally, you can also try the Tax Ombudsman. But let's move on to Part 4C objections. The objection procedure is set out in Division 3 of Part 4C, and it contains Sections 14ZU to 14ZZ. Timing issues. You have to make an objection against an assessment, an original assessment, within 2 or 4 years of the notice of the assessment. Whether you're talking about 2 years or 4 years depends on whether you're a taxpayer with simple tax affairs or a taxpayer with more complex tax affairs. And the 2 and 4 year period mirror the same periods in which the Commissioner can amend a tax return, can amend an assessment. The assessment of a taxpayer with simple tax affairs can be assessed for going back 2 years. For a taxpayer with complex tax affairs, the assessment can be amended going back 4 years. Where you're talking about an amended assessment, the objection must be filed within 60 days of the notice of amended assessment, or if it's later, the 2 or 4 year period of the original assessment. The Commissioner can grant an extension of time to make an objection, and if the Commissioner refuses to grant that extension upon the taxpayer's request, then the taxpayer can apply to the Tribunal for a review of that decision. The taxpayer can force an objection decision. Under section 14ZYI, after 60 days, the taxpayer can require the Commissioner to make a decision. This raises the question, when should section 14ZYI be utilised? Well, this depends on whether you want to speed things up or whether you want to slow things down. And there are different schools of thought on which is the best approach, and I know there are different schools of thought on the panel as to which is the best approach. Some argue that it's better to get things before a court because getting a matter before a court changes the power, a bit of the power imbalance between the Commissioner and the taxpayer. Once a matter's before a court, the Commissioner's powers of investigation are curtailed. The Commissioner can no longer use his specific statutory powers for the purposes of advancing his position before the court. He can't issue a Section 264 notice and use it for the purposes of gathering information to assist him in that court proceeding. All that he can do is use the court's processes to gather information. So in that way, once a matter's before a court, the positions of the parties are a little bit more equalised. It's not to say that the Commissioner can't issue a 264 notice for purposes which don't, for purposes other than that particular proceeding, and if he gains information which is relevant to that proceeding, then he can use it. But he is limited to the proceedings or the processes of the court if what he wants to do is gather information for that proceeding in particular. And I was recently involved in a matter where that very issue arose. The Commissioner had issued assessments to a few taxpayers. It was part of a much larger audit. He was continuing with his investigation of the much larger audit, which might give rise to some documents, some evidence, which is of assistance in the proceeding. And the question was whether or not the Commissioner was able to continue with those investigations outside the court processes. And if the court finds that the Commissioner has overstepped the mark, then it's a contempt of court. Others argue that delay is best, don't use Section 14ZYI, except in exceptional circumstances, that delay can only work to the advantage of the taxpayer. So an issue for the panel that we might discuss later on is when we should utilise Section 14ZYI and when not. When we should try to speed things up and when we should try to slow them down. The objection and the approved form. Section 14ZU says that the objection must be in the approved form. The approved form can be found on the ATO's website, and one section of the approved form requires the taxpayer to set out their reasons for objection. You can be very brief or you can be very detailed in that. Another question we might discuss with the panel later on is how you should actually frame your objection. I'd like to just put my bit in before they get a go and say I've never seen an objection rejected for brevity, but this doesn't mean that the best objection is a brief objection. I've seen very short objections from very experienced tax practitioners who are across all the law, and they might mention the relevant legislation, but they provide very little detail, very little argument. An objection such as that might be valid and it might start the Part 4C process rolling, but it won't assist you to get the answer you want from the ATO at the earliest possible stage. And the earlier you get the answer you want, the cheaper it's going to be for you. I've also seen very long objections using every legal term imaginable. With this form of objection, it can be actually difficult for the reader to work out precisely what are the real grounds of the objection. I think the best form is to just explain all of the reasons why the assessment is wrong in simple and plain language. Keep it focused, make sure that it's comprehensive. And the other point I would like to make about the objection process is that a stitch in time does save nine. When you're objecting against an assessment, make sure you give the tax office all the relevant facts, as much information as the tax office needs to determine the objection. It's not the time to keep shots in your locker at all. For example, if a significant issue in a dispute is the value of an asset, then provide an expert valuation at the objection stage. Because if you don't and the objection is denied, it's going to take you far much more time and far more effort to get an expert valuation who therefore has to provide an affidavit and perhaps give evidence in a court or tribunal hearing. If the tax officer's got the numbers wrong in the original assessment, try to sort it out at the objection stage. What you don't want to be trying to do is sort out the numbers by way of evidence and affidavits. You want the focus in a court or tribunal hearing to be on the substantive issues, not the dollars and cents, which can be very difficult to explain in an affidavit. What you also don't want is the tax office realising after determining the objection and after court or tribunal proceedings have commenced that the numbers are wrong and issuing an amended assessment at that stage, because that's only going to slow down the whole court and tribunal process and make it more complex. I've seen that happen in a couple of instances, and what happens is that the court or tribunal proceedings are put on hold whilst the amended assessments then have to go through the whole Part 4C process of objection and denial of objection, and then they're combined with the later with the proceedings which are on hold and the matter continues. It's far easier to set out the facts of the situation and accurate and supportable facts at the objection stage in a document given to the ATO than it is to start trying to pull together evidence with affidavits and witness statements. So when you're doing an objection, it may seem like an onerous task at the time to really put your case together, but it's a good idea to do it at that point in time and avoid actually having to run a case in the tribunal or in the court. The grounds of objection. Section 14ZU says that the objection must state fully and in detail the grounds that the person relies on. The grounds set out in the objection are important. If you end up in the tribunal or the federal court, then Part 4C says that the taxpayer is limited to the grounds stated in the objection unless the tribunal or the court order otherwise. An issue for the panel is, when might the Commissioner contest an application to amend grounds? Now, certainly in my experience, the Commissioner will not ordinarily oppose an application for an order to amend the grounds in an objection. But I think some members of the panel may have experience or knowledge of circumstances where that has occurred and might want to talk a little bit about that. Just want to say something about amended assessments and objecting against amended assessments. It's always be wary of Section 14ZV. Section 14ZV says that if the tax objection is made against a tax decision, and I'm going to read this slowly and I'm going to quote it. If the taxation objection is made against a taxation decision being an assessment or determination that has been amended in any particular, then a person's right to object against the amended assessment or amended determination is limited to a right to object against alterations or additions in respect of or matters relating to that particular. What that means is that the receipt of an amended assessment doesn't open up all issues on which you've been assessed, all matters on which you've been assessed for objection. It only opens up the issues which have been amended by that assessment. So if you want to object against an assessment and you're out of time to do so, and the Commissioner issues an amended assessment, You can't then object against other matters that were only in the original assessment. Other matters that were in the original assessment. You can only object against matters which are in the amended assessment. And if you want to object against other matters, then you have to seek an extension of time to object against the original assessment. Appealing an objection decision. Under Part 4C, you've got a choice. You can apply to the tribunal or you can appeal to the federal court. Apply to the tribunal for review or appeal to the federal court. Now, I've underlined or. I haven't bolded it because I couldn't work out how to do that. But it's very important. You can't do both. And once you've done one, you can't change your mind. You can't have a proceeding transferred from the tribunal to the court or vice versa. So the correct decision as to which forum to go to must be made at the start, the first time. It can only be made once. Should you go to the tribunal or the federal court? You'll find lots of people talking about lots and lots of differences between the tribunal and the federal court. I'm just going to highlight a couple, and the panel might want to add to this list. The first one, which I think is possibly the most significant issue in some circumstances, is that the tribunal is a hearing de novo. The tribunal stands in the place of the commissioner and remakes the decision. Now, this can be very helpful where the commissioner's opinion is involved. And I always think the obvious example here is where the commissioner has formed the opinion that there has been fraud or evasion. If the commissioner forms the opinion that there's been fraud or evasion, then he can amend assessments going back in time indefinitely, back 10, 20, 30 years, if he wishes to. Now, if you take that question and the issue, that question to the federal court, then the court can't replace the commissioner's opinion with his own. What the court can do is consider whether or not the commissioner has made an error of law in the forming of his opinion. For example, he didn't take into account something that he should have taken into account, or he did take into account and something that was irrelevant and should not have been taken into account. It's only if the court finds that the commissioner did make an error of law in forming that opinion that, according to a decision of Justice Drummond, the decision in Kajewski, the court can then replace the commissioner's opinion with the court's opinion. There are some varying opinions over whether or not that is the correct approach or whether or not the court is bound, having found an error of law in the forming of the opinion, to send the matter back to the commissioner. But I am aware of at least one instance in which the commissioner has not contested that, the court, having found an error of law in the forming of an opinion, can actually replace that opinion with the court's opinion. But it's much easier, I think, to take a question of evasion to the tribunal, where the tribunal can remake the decision. And I did have an ATO officer say to me recently that she doesn't understand why any taxpayer would take an evasion fine into the federal court, because it is much more difficult to overturn. Another issue is that the rules of evidence don't apply in the tribunal. But this is not to say that the rules of evidence are irrelevant in the tribunal. The rules of evidence are based on quite reasonable thinking and logical thinking. What this means is that the rules of evidence don't apply in the tribunal, but they do affect the weight that is given to any evidence presented. For example, hearsay evidence is allowed and can be allowed in the tribunal, but it will be given less weight because hearsay evidence is quite obviously less reliable than direct evidence. A couple of other points. In the tribunal, parties bear their own costs, whereas in the court, the costs normally follow the cause. Costs are normally awarded against the losing party. Confidentiality is available in the tribunal, but if you do appeal a tribunal decision, then you'll lose that confidentiality if you appeal the decision to a court. So an obvious issue for the panel is when to go to the tribunal and when to go to the federal court. I also want to say something about concurrent proceedings. As I said earlier, the Commissioner now issues, under the legislation, as he's required to, issues assessments for principal tax, for primary tax, and issues assessments for penalties, separate assessments for penalties. I'm aware of a number of circumstances now in which some proceedings have been commenced in the Federal Court and then related in the Tribunal. And I'm aware of three circumstances in which this has occurred. I should just point out, concurrent proceedings, if you haven't read that, means that you have the one decision maker who is a judge of the Federal Court and is also has a Tribunal Commission, is a presidential member of the Tribunal, and sits as both in the same matter and hears the same evidence only once and makes a Federal Court decision and a Tribunal decision. I'm aware of three circumstances that it has occurred. First one is where the principal tax objection was filed in the Federal Court and the penalty objection applying to the same year, or the objection against the penalty assessment, or more correctly, the appeal against the objection decision against the penalty assessment, has been filed in the Tribunal. I have been told that one of the reasons that taxpayers do this is to ensure that a particular judge might hear the matter, which will be a judge with an AAT commission. But it doesn't always work if that is the purpose of it. I'm involved in a matter where this is precisely what occurred, where the objection against the objection decision against the primary tax is going to the Federal Court, the objection decision against the penalty is going to the Tribunal, and it is and has been for a long time the docket of a judge without a presidential member. So it doesn't always work if that is the purpose. The other circumstance in which I'm aware of this occurring, and this one I can see a bit more logic to it and a bit more reason for it, is where the objections in respect of the earlier years, where the assessments could only be issued because there was a finding of evasion, are appealed to the Tribunal, so that the question of evasion, there can be a de novo hearing on the question of evasion, but the assessments in respect of the later years, where there's no question of evasion, are appealed to the Federal Court, which ensures that the rules of evidence apply, which ensures that the taxpayer can object against particular evidence. The last circumstance that I'm involved in one at the moment, where the first amended assessments were issued that involved evasion. The taxpayer appealed to the Federal Court but later regretted this decision because he wanted a hearing de novo on the evasion question. Meanwhile, the Commissioner has redone his calculations. This is a very messy case. Meanwhile, the Commissioner has redone his calculations, realised that they were wrong, and issued amended assessments with different numbers in them. And what the taxpayer then did was appeal the amended decisions to the Tribunal. And this matter is now before a federal judge, a federal court judge who has an AAT commission. So the same evidence won't have to be heard twice. There are added complications, if you think it through, with this matter because of Section 14ZV, the only issue really before the Tribunal is whether or not the calculations were right. So conceivably, the court could find the Commissioner made no error of law in forming his evasion opinion. So the first amended assessment, or the first amended assessments in this instance, stand. But the same decision maker, sitting as a presidential member in the Tribunal, could replace the Commissioner's decision and find, well, I would have found, even though there's no error of law, I would have found differently. So the second amended assessments fall over, but the first ones still stand. How that'll play out practically, time will tell. Possibly the judge may see the difficulties for all involved if he finds no error of law, but he would form a different opinion. The last thing I just want to talk about is alternative dispute resolution. ADR is possible at the objection stage, and there seems to be a push from a lot of parties involved in tax litigation, in fact in litigation in general, to move towards ADR if at all possible. The Commission has certainly made a number of statements that he's in favour of it. The Inspector General of Taxation recently issued a report in May of 2012, which was titled Review into the Australian Taxation Office's Use of Early and Alternative Dispute Resolution. This report was prepared by the Inspector General at the request of the Commissioner. So this investigation was undertaken at the request of the Commissioner. The Inspector General thought that ADR is appropriate except where the cost outweighs the benefit, and his example in this case was where there's a clearly defined issue of law which has to be determined and the facts are really not in dispute, in which case just take it to a court and get the issue of law determined. The other is where there's serious criminal fraud or evasion, so the matter should be taken before a court or a tribunal. And the second one, or the third one, is where there might be public benefit in having the issue determined, for example, in a tax case. But the Inspector General thought that ADR is appropriate in a lot of circumstances, in probably the majority. He had a series of recommendations to encourage ADR at the earliest stage of a tax dispute, that is before proceedings are instigated in the tribunal or the federal court. For example, the taxpayer being able to request ADR before proceedings commence, and the Commissioner's response to this was that it appears that he might be having a trial in limited circumstances of that. Now, I just want to note also the genuine steps statement. Since the 1st of August 2011, applicants to the federal court in matters including taxation must file a genuine steps statement. They must file a statement saying what efforts they've made to resolve the dispute before getting it to a court. And where they do file that, then the Commissioner must file a response. This is under the Civil Dispute Resolution Act. Even knowing that that is coming up in potential court proceedings may encourage the Commissioner, knowing that he will have to file a response to alternative dispute resolution, may enable the Commissioner or cause the Commissioner to look favourably upon a request at an early stage for some form of alternative dispute resolution. So the final issue for the panel that I've identified, plus whatever other issues that you might have, is what experiences they have with ADR during the objection stage. This includes what options there are for alternative dispute resolution, and I really think of two types of alternative dispute resolution. One of them is mediation, where you have a third party come in and try to get the parties talking together and reaching a compromise where both parties lose, but not perhaps as much as they otherwise would. And therefore, perhaps they win a bit too. The other form of alternative dispute resolution I think of is where an independent third party decision maker comes in and the two parties broadly agree that they will abide by whatever decision that decision maker comes up with. So the issue for the panel is when the Commissioner might support alternative dispute resolution and when it might actually be helpful at this early stage before you reach the tribunal or the court. And when you reach the tribunal or the court, we don't need to talk about that because next week's breakfast is covering all of the issues in the tribunal, and then the week after that, we'll be covering the federal court. Now it's coffee time.